I want zombie takeout. I want it so bad.
I want zombie takeout. I want it so bad.
I want zombie takeout. I want it so bad.
I want zombie takeout. I want it so bad. Welcome to episode 170 of
Zombie Takeout,
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted. This is from John Phillips on Facebook. In reference to the trailer for this week's movie, we had a little exchange with him. You said, Netflix on vodka ready. To which he responded, "When it's over, you'll be thank the maker. I didn't have to hear them say their own dialogue." And I said, I'm saving it for the morning as usual. Hopefully I'll be asleep enough, you know, that it won't hurt too bad.
I don't understand how you could have saved it to the morning, you know, because, you know, who wants to just drink as soon as vodka as soon as they get up, you know?
We'll get to that.
All right.
And John said, "I enjoy this movie even though it's bad. Thank goodness the music saves it." And I said, you know, I think the quality of the songwriting specifically was the only saving grace. It looks like every cheesy 70s variety show rolled up into one. At which point John pointed out that George Martin actually produced it, which disturbed me. And then vodka, you said, must have vodka to watch this. On to some news. This is from Cinema Blend. Rob Corddry and Leslie Bibb give birth to Satan in Hellbaby trailer. A trailer has been released for Hellbaby, the new movie from Reno 911's Robert Ben-Gurion and Thomas Lennon. The movie stars Robert Corddry and Leslie Bibb as a happily married couple with a baby on the way. The pair are positively ecstatic to move into their newly acquired home in New Orleans, even after finding out that its colorful nickname is the House of Blood. That is, until weird stuff starts happening. I've seen the full trailer. Your computer crapped out about halfway through, but you got the general idea.
Yeah, it looks something worth
Oh, definitely looks good. Lennon and Garant play these completely badass priests. And Rob Corddry's character is in denial for most of it. He's all of these, you know, signs start happening. He's just completely oblivious to all of it until he gets pulled under a bed by the demon. It looks hilarious. And on to this week's movie, which is, of course, from 1978. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Yes, the movie, not the album or a movie show, unfortunately. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary.
Brought to you by Mustard Real Estate. For all your seedy underworld needs, try Mustard Real Estate.
And also sponsored by the 70s. What the hell were we thinking?
And also brought to you by vodka, making movies more palatable since at least 1978.
I definitely regretted my choice to be sober while watching this.
Oh, yeah, that's, I was wondering how you were going to pull that off. But, all right, so our plot here, it's a bit of a jumbled mess, to say the least.
Yeah.
Because they shoehorned as many Beatles songs in as they can, if it fit the plot or not.
Specifically, with the exceptions of Within You, Without You, and Lovely Rita, it's the entire Sgt. Pepper, and also nearly all of Abbey Road.
Yeah, I think they left off Something, and Octopus's Garden,
mm-hmm.
and a few parts of the Abbey Road medley, for some reason. Uh-huh. I'm not sure why. They would have actually fit better than Day in the Life, which did not fit at all. Mm-hmm. Made no sense. Anyway, we have this, it's weird because they have this military band that, of course, won the war. They won World War I with the band.
And their magical instruments.
Their magical instruments. And of course, ignoring it was 20 years ago today, which would kind of meant, I think they were talking about a World War II band, but this is a World War I band. And they played throughout the decades and went in and out of style, but still were guaranteed to
Raise a
raise a
smile.
smile. They of course keel over because they're old and it's the 70s now, and people with hair have taken over. Actually, they didn't keel over in the 70s. They were still kids, weren't they? So I guess it was the 50s where they keeled over. And the kids grow up, of course, to be the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton. And they become the newest version of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And they're in their little small town known as Heartland. And there's so many groaners like that throughout this, which
That didn't
are
even
only,
faze me.
well,
I mean, I see your point,
that's
but that was the least of them by far.
that's what the vodka is there to cushion the blow of so many groaners, because you really get beaten up by them and you need to numb yourself to them before going forward. So anyway, they get the plot really begins with them getting signed to a record deal, and they go out to LA. They meet the bastard record exec, who's of course seedy, and lures them into a contract that didn't really seem to tie them down to anything, because they really did whatever the fuck they wanted to anyway in the end. But still, they were tricked, and they sign this deal, and they're chased by the girls, of course, and there's this pseudo love story going on between Peter Frampton and Strawberry
Fields,
Fields.
yes.
Even though she's called Loretta at one point in the song,
That they
and
just didn't change the lyric.
her name kind of changed depending on the song that was going on. No need to change those lyrics to actually fit the story. Twyla Tharp came years later to try to do shit like that. Who actually, could they really sue Twyla Tharp? Because I mean, man, that's exactly what, anyway. So the town of Heartland is going to shit meanwhile, and it's because this guy Mustard came there and bought the town out, and apparently they had no choice but to sell out to him for some reason or another. I'm not sure how that works exactly.
Because the magical instruments were stolen.
Oh, right, because the magical instruments were stolen, they of course had to sell out and do whatever this real estate guy wanted them to do. And then of course he couldn't just keep the instruments for himself. He had to scatter them to the various villains for the band to simply come and take back. That's as deep as this gets, isn't it? So yes, they hold the benefit for the tent for Mr. Kite, the mayor, of course. And they go on a quest to get the instruments back.
Well, they went on the quest first and got them, but
That's
somehow
true.
lost them.
And then got them stolen again by Mr. Mustard.
And then they had to do the benefit.
They stole the instruments while doing the benefit.
Was that it?
Yeah. And then they had to get them back, and hilarity ensues.
I'm going to start with the things I liked about the movie. There were a few. The arrangements for the different Beatles songs through the different time periods at the beginning, with the original Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, that was interesting. They had like a Dixieland or kind of a bluegrass thing, and 20s jazz, and it was interesting to hear the Beatles songs played, in the style of different time periods. And they were also used as incidental music now and then. That was
Oh
kind of
yeah.
interesting.
Oh, I thought you were done.
No, I'm not done. Just looking through my notes.
Was waiting for that. I was like, here are the nine things I liked about it. There was the beginning, and then there was the incidental music. Pass the beer nuts.
The she's leaving home scene could have been very touching if it weren't for the stupid robot voices. The rest of it was done nicely.
That was so shoehorned in,
Oh,
though.
yes, but it was done nicely. As
My
unrealistic as it
God.
was, I liked the gag during Oh Darling where the band just left one by one.
Yes, I like that too.
Robin tries to walk away with the headphones on and nearly takes his head off.
Yeah.
Dr. Maxwell reminded me of the dentist from Little Shop, so I got a kick out of him. Might
Well,
have been
yeah.
because it was Steve Martin.
The dentist came later, obviously.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah.
Little Shop was more recent than this. I was not aware of
Well,
that.
the movie version, at least.
Okay, and he may have been influenced by the play version.
Remember, Steve Martin played the dentist.
I know. That's probably why he a big part of why he reminded me of him.
Yeah.
Another thing it reminded me of, and this I know came later, after Sgt. Pepper's, father-son's brainwashing scene reminded me a lot of The Wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Had to be an influence.
Yeah.
I liked Earth, Wind, and Fire and Aerosmith's covers, the only two good covers in the movie.
Yeah, Aerosmith is really the only band that can not be embarrassed by this movie. Even Earth, Wind, and Fire, I was kind of a little disappointed, to tell you the truth. So
no,
that was
it was
the
good.
vodka.
It was considerably better than all of the other ones.
That wasn't from one of the two albums that they did. Well, in fact, I mean, they also
Okay.
did some Let It Be also, but
There
I mean,
were probably other songs thrown in. But
yeah.
the Earth, Wind & Fire cover was considerably better than everything up to that point, and it was before the Aerosmith cover, so I liked it.
That's true.
I was pleasantly surprised that they killed Strawberry off, until they went and ruined that.
Oh, come on, though. You really expect that?
I wasn't surprised by it, I was just disappointed. And using Golden Slumber to carry that weight in a funeral scene, I think, was a nice touch.
Yeah.
It played very nicely with the funeral. That's it. That's my list of things I liked. Longer than I ever thought it would be. Oh, and George Burns. I forgot George Burns.
Oh, wow, that was so terrible. And how wasted do I have to be that I forgot that he sang Fixing a Hole? For some reason, I thought he'd sang When I'm 64.
It's still George Burns. So, to me, he can do no wrong even in this.
Ooh, oh, man. Yeah, and I felt really embarrassed for Steve Martin. In fact, my notes, it says, this is probably more embarrassing than those Cheaper by the Dozen movies.
Well, but consider what he was doing at the time. It was the whole wild and crazy guy thing.
He was like the biggest comedian in the world.
He was huge, but his shtick wasn't very far from what he did in the movie.
Think about that.
He's done much more interesting things since then, of course, but...
I think this is pre-Jerk, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think that was around 80.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's like right before it. But, I mean, this is... He's doing, like, insane, college gigs and, and all that stuff.
Right.
I mean, there wasn't a bigger comedian than him back then.
True. And he was... Well, I won't say he was slumming it, because he probably got paid a lot to do this.
Oh, you can't say you're slumming... And, yeah... The Jerk was 79, year before the
Oh,
Jerk.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's really when his movie career took off.
Oh, of course.
He was a stand-up before this.
Right.
So he had a chance to do a movie in a role that really he could play with what he was already doing and get paid a lot. So I can't blame him for it.
Well, think about it. This was, I mean, there were no bigger artists than the Bee Gees or Frampton back
right?
then.
Mm-hmm.
And to have them do a movie together... You would really think they had a slam dunk, you know?
In fact, my first memory of this movie, and I'd never seen it before today, but of course I was aware of it. My first memory was when I went to see Episode 4 in the theater at 5 years old in 77. There was a trailer for this before the movie. My sister, who was 13 at the time, completely lost it. She was in love with the Bee Gees and Frampton, so she completely lost it over this. Of course, I'm thinking, it's not Star Wars, who cares?
Did you catch the Star Wars nod?
During the Maxwell Silverhammer stuff?
No, it was... Oh yeah, you're right, that was the Maxwell Silverhammer stuff. I was thinking...
When they brought the two hammers together and it was basically a lightsaber effect?
Yeah, it was just a brief,
Yeah, just a nod.
Yeah.
Now, I've never really disliked Frampton. I like a few of his songs. And I don't really dislike the Bee Gees. I mean, I'm not crazy about the whole Saturday Night Fever thing, but I think they did some good stuff before then, and even some good stuff after them. Barry Gibb's a brilliant songwriter.
So few people realize that they were around.
Well before Saturday Night Fever.
Right. I mean, the only reason why I know is because I'm familiar with the work of Genesis, and apparently their stuff from their high school days, they were emulating the Bee Gees.
Okay.
They
Interesting.
were striving for a Bee Gees sound in
Wow.
68.
But hearing them play the Beatles was painful. And having John point out that George Martin produced this is just mind-boggling, because how can you mess up the Beatles when you have decent musicians and the original producer?
Well, one thing I can't imagine is a Beatles purist.
Oh no.
And there are so many, and many Beatles fans are Beatles
Oh yeah.
purists who probably wanted to commit bodily harm to them
God,
for
yeah.
this.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm not a purist myself. I really digged like the Easy Star All-Stars version of Sgt. Pepper.
Right.
But yeah, I could not see.
I would imagine it would be very similar to my reaction to Airbender.
Actually, you know what I kept thinking of, and let's pull the curtain back and go back in time here for our listeners. About 20 years ago, during a
Oh
one of
my, yes.
our shows, we had
This was not during a show.
oh,
But
you're
you're going
right.
where I'm thinking. Where I think you're going.
You're right, it wasn't. I was doing production work in the next room, and you were just,
I was sitting on sitting in on this guy Chuck's show.
That's right, you were sitting in on this other Mr. Muck Chiller, was his air name,
Yes.
and it was his show, and he was a big Rush fan. And
And I oddly enough, side note, I was not a big Rush fan. He was the one who turned me into a Rush fan, so I
oh,
wasn't really
really?
that
Didn't know
into them at
that.
the time.
We unearthed a Young Black Teenagers song
Was
called.
the name of the group, and they were a rap group, and mostly white, if I recall.
Yes. And there was this song called Time to Make the Donuts. And they sampled Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
And the reaction we got from this guy was hilarious.
He wanted to ransack the station.
He
He was that angry.
destroyed the CD
That's right, he did.
on the air. While I was ruining a production bit that I was working on, which caused me to storm the studio and start attacking, assaulting him
With the mic open.
with the microphone. Yes. I would imagine it would go a lot like that.
But, I mean, like you, I'm not exactly a Beatles purist. I'm not even a huge Beatles fan. I like them, but I'm not obsessive at all. I think this movie may have ruined them for me. I don't know that I can listen to them, at least not any of these songs, without flashing back at this point.
Well,
Hopefully that will wear off.
Sergeant Pepper, I kind of think, and there's going to be people that want to hurt me for this, but I think it's an overrated album.
Yeah.
I can say that because it's rated so highly. Like, I mean, insanely, like, best album ever. But it didn't really pull off a concept.
No,
I
they
mean,
tried, but
they weren't even really trying all that much for a concept, but it was they were a band who was tired of it all. You know, they'd stopped touring at that point. They just couldn't deal with the insane, girls, shrieking at them. You could even hear their music over that. So they were just done with it. And they kind of came up with this parody band putting on a show. I mean, that's kind of the loose concept of the album, but it isn't really a concept because they were tired. They were just done.
And didn't the Moody Blues beat them to it anyway?
They came out around exactly the same time,
Oh, okay.
Days of Future Past. And if you want to listen to an album that sticks to a concept, damn. They hit it right on the head.
Because the debate is which one of those two was the first concept album.
It's like within weeks of each other they came
Okay.
out. It's that silly.
And I think
Yeah.
Smile was around the same time too.
Oh.
Beach Boys.
Oh.
So there was kind of this race to make the first concept album, because they all were kind of aware of what each other were doing.
But the thing with the Beatles is, for them to come out with an album, all four of them had to have been firing, you know, they all had to have had perfect songs because at that point they were kind of coming into separate solo
Yeah.
works, kind of. Now, how that relates to this movie, these guys clearly either didn't get the lyrics or
Yeah.
didn't want to get the
I don't
lyrics.
think they bothered.
Because they're singing the Sgt. Pepper song when they're still like in the small town, aw shucks, you know, we're about to get our break. You know, but they're singing about a band who were just so tired of it all, you know? It was almost like it was a big fuck you. I mean, those lyrics are, you know, I don't really want to start the show. Think about that. It's like a singer coming out and being like, you know what? I'm really not into this. But you know, there's this other guy we've got that's gonna sing for you, and he's gonna sing a nice song. And of course, that guy was Ringo. Singing, you know, Little Help for My Friends. So that's why it's not really a concept album. It's just, you know, they were bored.
I
They were
really
done.
have to re-examine some of those lyrics. I never thought about it in that context.
Well, yeah, the whole thing. Just, I mean, they were done. They just had enough. But I mean, Abbey Road, on the other hand, that is an album that I is definitely could be the best album ever recorded. I mean,
Possibly, yeah.
it's just insanely good from beginning to end. And to see them do those songs, that was more painful than seeing them do the Sgt. Pepper stuff. Because the Sgt. Pepper stuff is kind of shticky to begin with. You know, the outfits and all that. And I think they were intentionally being, you know, over the top. But, you know, Abbey Road is just such a work of art. And to see them piss on it was just kind of like a, oh.
Now, as a musician, there were a few things that were odd slash interesting in the movie. The first scene where you see the original Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in World War One. Clearly, all of the horns and probably all of the instruments were obviously synth. There was not a real instrument on the track. And I think that was the case for all of that big band era stuff that they did leading into that, even, you know, through the different eras. I think that was all synth. At one point, Barry and Robin switch instruments. First time you see him, Robin is playing guitar, Barry's playing bass. On Nowhere Man, they switch, and they switch for the rest of the movie. Robin is now the bass player, and Barry is now playing guitar, for no apparent reason. And also, and this had to be a case of product placement, all the guitars were Gibsons. Only a guitar player would notice this, but at one point I saw Barry playing an Explorer, which is a very pointy, kind of very 80s looking guitar.
I'm so accustomed to, you know, disco Bee Gees that just seeing them playing instruments to me is just kind of like a weird
They
novelty.
always played instruments, even on the disco stuff. Barry
Yeah,
played
but
guitar, Morris played bass.
you never like they never showed them, you know? It was like any of the videos or movie stuff that they had were them just in whatever suits they were wearing or, you know, the terrible Staying Alive video. Oh my God. If you ever saw that before, it's like they filmed it on a set for the show old show Combat. Awful, awful shit.
Now, you mentioned A Day in the Life, which is very shoehorned in.
Oh good God, yeah.
You see this newspaper about how, you know, they saved the town, and then there's this little headline about Mr. Jones committing suicide, which really caught me off guard because I didn't know what they were leading toward. It took me a second.
It was a Strawberry Fields gives her life
Oh,
for
that
the
was it,
town
yes.
was the headline.
Right, and then the bit about Mr. Jones committing suicide, which made no sense to me until I recognized the music and remembered the first verse.
I didn't even catch the Mr. Jones committing suicide bit. Really? That was in the paper there?
Yeah. But then, you know, before the big shift in the song, Barry sings the line, "I'd love to turn you on," to his brothers. His actual brothers and the characters, the three Gibb brothers were playing the Henderson brothers.
I think that lyric had a different meaning
No, then I'm taking it, yes, but it was still funny.
because I was gonna say
Turn On was did not mean anything sexual when John Lennon sang it. It was about LSD.
yeah
Let's just be straightforward about that.
exactly. I liked that they actually went with the drug reference. They didn't sugarcoat the industry. You
Yeah.
know, they were pantomiming the doing of blow in the scene where they were.
I wouldn't be so sure they were pantomiming it,
Of course, well, the only reason why I don't think so is because you didn't see any there.
oh, okay. I didn't look that closely.
You could just see them taking the dollar bill and, you know, sniffing off the dollar bill, but you kind of knew what they were what they were getting at there.
Now you mentioned the possibility of bands sullying their image by being involved with this. Aerosmith was actually the second choice to play the future villain band. Kiss was first approached, but turned it down because they thought it would hurt their image, and they chose to do Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park instead.
Which is a movie we will do in the future.
As soon as we can find a copy of it.
Yeah.
Very hard to find. No, Kiss. The band I can't even call sellouts because they were always about making money.
Right.
Wouldn't do this movie.
Now, this is the oddest thing about this movie and still the toughest thing to wrap my head around. On one hand, they were talking about the industry and the direction it had headed in and was going and
Right.
going into. It no longer being about love or joy or really music, but about making money. On the other hand, they made this movie.
Which is all about making money.
Right. They were using the Beatles stuff to make money off of it.
Yeah. I think maybe they slipped that plot in past the producers who were just after the money.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I would think it wasn't just slipped in. It was all over from beginning to end
Well,
of the
yes, but
film.
I think the producers just saw all the names and said, we're going to make a mint on this, and
Yeah.
didn't pay attention to the story.
No, I think it was you couldn't have made it without, knowing what you were making. And the odd thing is, they really hit the nail on the head when it came to the villains of the story and the way, Americans, well, maybe not just American, but, culture was heading in general. Like that future villain band, all I kept thinking was when I was watching it was, wow, I need to get some more vodka first.
Oh,
And then it was, wow, very well be Sammy Hagar up there.
Oh, it was going to be Kiss. It was
I
the
mean,
original plan.
think about it. They're talking about using rock music as, I guess a tool to control the masses, rather than, it being a sign of rebellion or a sign of individuality. They were using it as a tool of conformity. And along, of course, with our school system and everything was just going to work in sync.
And if you look at
And
how the band were dressed, they were basically stormtroopers.
oh yeah, definitely, they were wearing pseudo military uniforms. So it was just wow, were they really that far off?
True.
They really hit the nail on the head, kind of like where things were going. It I kind of feel the same way when I see Green Day now,
Now, also in reference to Aerosmith, the shooting script called for Peter Frampton's character to kill Steven Tyler's, but when it came time to film the scene, Aerosmith threatened to walk out, saying, quote, "There's no fucking way that Steven is going to get directly offed by Frampton." Joe Perry said that specifically. Went on to say, "It's got to be an accident, like it was in the original script we fucking agreed to," which finally led to the compromise of having Tyler's character accidentally pushed off the stage to his death by strawberry. So, yeah, they didn't want to be killed. Basically, they didn't want the implication that Frampton was better than they were.
And who could blame them? Because I mean,
From a musical standpoint, yes. I'm not a huge. I like both. I'm not a huge fan, but yes, I will grant you that from a musical standpoint. From a commercial standpoint, at this point in time, Frampton was huge.
I don't think they were thinking about a commercial standpoint or
Oh, no.
either one. I think it was just
Musical.
who would win in a fight.
Yeah. Oh, that too. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
I would not want to admit or have it even seem that Bieber or Frampton could beat take you in a fight.
Right. That is, he
No.
was kind of, I mean, like I said, I like a lot of his stuff from that era, but he really was kind of the Bieber of his time.
Actually, that'd probably be more of a Leif Garrett kind of thing.
Leif Garrett was roughly at the same time, at the same of the same period. In fact,
But you know,
he's in the movie.
he's the baby I love your ways guy.
Well, yeah,
I
but he
mean, come
also
on,
did Do
man.
You Feel Like We Do? He did. There are much better songs on that.
That's true. That's true.
That was the power ballad to get the girls to buy the
Gonna get your ass kicked by Michael Bolton? I mean, come on.
album. That might be a better analogy, yeah.
And was that Alice Cooper or Yanni that they were going
He's
up against in that scene? I couldn't tell.
really the one who should be ashamed of himself.
Oh yeah, he should for, since 78 on, he should really have been walking around with a bag over his head for this movie.
Because Aerosmith, they were signed, they were known, but they weren't huge at this point.
Right.
So they could use the promotion.
Right.
Alice was huge.
Yeah.
And he agreed to do this.
And which song did he even sing? Was that Here Comes the Sun King?
No, I don't think it was that. I don't recall offhand.
Because they didn't, I don't recall hearing Here Comes the Sun King, and yet they made a point of him being the Sun King.
Yeah, father son, yeah.
Just doesn't make any sense.
I guess whatever, and I don't have it in my notes, but whatever song he did sounded better spoken, because even though Alice can sing to a point, he spoke every line.
Yeah, that was really uncomfortable.
Yeah. All right, one last thing, because I'm pretty much done with my notes. I got a bit of a scare at the end. There's a scene at the end where you have a bunch of random celebrities that they called in for the day to sing the last song.
That which is crazy.
Yeah. For a second, I thought I saw the Ramones. It wasn't them, but there are some guys in there who look like the Ramones.
There were a lot of people. It very well could have been just uncredited.
Okay, it could have been, yeah. Okay, that's disturbing then.
But there were so many people. The heart, I mean,
Yeah.
we can't even really list it because there were just so many people.
Carol Channing, Heart,
What the fuck was Carol Channing doing in there?
she was famous at the time.
In fact, there are more people in there than what IMDb was letting on to because
True.
I was watching the credits and saw names where I was like, are you shitting me? And did not see those same names on the IMDb.
Ah, I'm pretty sure I saw Dame Edna.
Well, yeah, that was in IMDb. And I had no idea Dame Edna was around in
That same
78.
year, I was just going to say that. I didn't hear about Dame Edna until the 90s.
Yeah. But I remember seeing Hank Williams Jr.
Oh, wow.
was in there somewhere. Of course, we caught Robert Palmer. A young Robert Palmer, which is really weird as hell. Sha Na Na.
Yeah.
Also, they had Edgar Winter.
That surprised me too, yeah.
But they didn't really show him in the IMDb.
Because Edgar Winter wasn't that big. He's never been that big. He's
Well,
kind of
no.
been a cult favorite.
Right.
So
But
I
that's
was.
post Frankenstein, so I mean,
Well,
that's all you
actually,
need.
wait, no. It wasn't Edgar Winter. It was Johnny Winter, the guitar player.
Oh.
Well, that's what got me, because Johnny Winter really has never been that well known, unless you're a guitar player. Edgar Winter
Is
has the mustache and he's kind of heavier. Johnny
he
Winter's the.
albino too?
Yeah, they both are. And
Oh, okay.
Johnny Winter's much thinner. So it was Johnny Winter, I'm pretty sure. He's a surprise, because again, never really that well known.
Yeah.
But so that could have been the Ramones. That disturbs me. I mean,
It could
granted,
have been.
they did Rock and Roll High School not that long after this, and that's disturbing and disappointing enough, but.
They're even suggesting on on IMDb that Paul and Linda and George Harrison are somewhere in there too.
That wouldn't surprise me, but I didn't catch them.
I didn't either, but it suggested that they are somewhere hidden in the crowd, that they're just, I mean, and it is a ridiculous crowd.
All right, I'm done with my notes.
I do.
And there's no sequel or remakes, thankfully.
I would love to see this remade
With the Beatles? With their songs?
with, let's see, we get whatever boy band. Since we're doing this now, we'll say One Direction. Even
Okay.
though their 15 minutes are about done. We keep the same lame ass story. Instead of Beatles music, though, we use Metallica songs.
Yeah, that actually works really well.
Huh?
Wow.
Instead of the carry golden slumbers carry that weight, it's for whom the bell tolls.
Yeah. For the scene with Billy and the girl getting together, nothing else matters.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh wow. Somebody get on that,
Yeah.
please.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the crux of this is it's a, I guess we're on to brains now, aren't
Yeah, on the brains.
we? This was a really horrendously awful film, wasn't
Yes, it was.
but with the right amount of vodka, it is enjoyable as hell.
Wow, I probably should have drank while watching it then.
It's funny, and like I said, it's kind of weird that they're, pointing these things out about sellouts while
Yeah.
making this movie. But it's also weird how accurate they were as to where the movie
True.
music business was going. So I'm actually giving this a four.
Wow.
As terrible as this is, I think it's definitely worth a
I
watch or
did not
two.
think it was mathematically possible for either of us to put this on the recommendations list.
I'd recommend this because, I mean, if you want a train wreck and a great movie to Misty, this is it.
To be clear, I will be keeping it off of the recommendations list.
All right.
Like I said, there were a few things I liked about it. And what you pointed out about the plot being very telling and somehow managing to make it into such a commercial film is interesting, and I think that gave it an extra brain. But I gotta go too.
Too. All right. That's what you get for
Watching it's over.
watching it sober. I was nowhere near as lit as I was when I first saw this, though. I was the first. I mean, yeah. Like I said, forgot that George Burns had sang "Fixin' a Hole." How I forgot that, I don't know.
All right, so what have we learned?
The hair. What was with the hair?
I learned what Sgt. Pepper, the album, was actually about. I actually didn't know that that was what inspired it, or what they were saying with it. Gonna have to go back and check it out.
Yeah, I mean they did their own things in there. I mean they oh yeah, a lot of their stuff was, solo work that they were just doing together.
But the idea about it being about a band getting tired or being,
Yeah.
and giving up, I'm gonna have to reassess the album in those terms.
Yeah, they're being very tongue in cheek with, we've got this singer who's going to sing for you kind of thing.
So until 3 weeks from now, yeah, we're taking a couple of weeks off. Ironically, we take time off when we're gonna be in the same county.
Yeah, I
Same
know.
general vicinity, we take time off, but so we're taking 2 weeks off. When we come back, we've talked about this movie a lot, but we finally managed to find it. We will be reviewing Cockfighter.
Yes, this is not a put on.
This is not a joke. This is
This
not
is not
some
a joke. This
kind
is a
of.
real movie, too.
This is not some ruse for some other movie. It's not. April was a while ago. We're not playing the whole, we're going away thing. No, this is a movie we've wanted to do for like 3 years.
I think we this has been more of an off-air thing than an on-air
Yeah,
thing.
I don't know if we talked about this on air, but you found this movie at some point on IMDb. I don't remember where.
As soon as I think it was, we were just looking at I don't know what we were looking through, and saw a movie called Cockfighter.
And you immediately became obsessed with reviewing this movie.
Yes, this has been a quest of mine for years now, and it will happen.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you've just listened to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. The next two are the only two we have decided, because we just decided on Cockfighter. So the next one we have in line. The request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. In fact, the week after Cockfighter, we will be getting to a request from William Hewling. We're gonna get into a little Tokusatsu. You'll also find the recommendations list. I can't believe you would recommend this one.
I would recommend this one, definitely. It's in the same vein as The Room.
I don't know. Like with Rocky, it was a 5 if only in the theaters. I think this is maybe a 4 only if intoxicated.
Very well could be, but I'm never going to watch this movie sober.
I'll never be
Ever.
watching it again. You can also email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTL1 or for the alphanumerically challenged,
I got blisters on my fingers.
414-368-9861. So until 3 weeks from now, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
The boys were really desperate.
Kind of feel the same way when I see Green Day now,
You're really cutting out.
Oh yeah,
All I heard was eh. After Green Day, whatever you said there.
I'd say I think after Green Day.
Oh, I'm just getting weird audio artifacts then. Okay, don't worry about it.